news, information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
How you came in like a horror late night horror movie TV host.
I wanted good evening. To. I actually wanted to. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
That's for next week when we review Dracula Untold.
So dun, dun, dun.
Don't get a hold of your. Don't get ahead of your Transylvania.
Okay, rewind. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lex Podcast, episode 24. This is Married Movie Reviews. This week we have two films to talk about, but before we go into that, we are going to discuss the box office and some news, as well as I understand that we have a question.
We do. We have a listener question.
Yes. I almost said reader, and I was like, wait, that's not right. So, what would you like to start with?
Let's go ahead and do the box office for this past weekend. The weekend of October
3rd through the 5th. So that was last weekend because we are currently recording Friday the 10th. So what do you think was first?
I know what was first.
What?
Gone Girl.
Yes. That brought in $37.5 million.
Not too shabby.
Not at all. And then second was Annabelle. Not too far behind, actually, because Gone Girl did 37.5, Annabelle did 37.1.
Yeah, that's pretty goddamn close.
Yeah, that's really...
And we didn't get Annabelle.
Yes, it did not come to our... The interesting thing, this says that Gone Girl was released in 3,014 theaters. Annabelle was released in 3,185. But not ours.
Nope, not ours. We were one of the only ones not to get it. For some reason. And
that doesn't mean that we won't get it a little bit later.
Yeah,
but
like, man, that was one I was looking forward to.
Maybe they'll be bringing it out the weekend of Halloween, hoping for that crowd.
Well,
who knows?
They can eat an ass.
Third, we had The Equalizer, which brought in 18.7 in its second week, bringing its grand total up to 64. Then we have Box Trolls.
The Box Trolls!
Yeah. Also in its second week, this week it brought in 11.9, bringing its grand total up to 32. In fifth, The Maze Runner, which brought in 11.6 in its third week, bringing its total to 73.5. Then, I think that you're going to find this shocking, but number six is Left Behind.
I don't find that shocking, though. I mean, I think...
And that brought 6.3.
I think that was primed to try to make some dollars off the Christians, so... No, seriously. I mean, Left Behind's like a book that all Christians read, so it's like...
Is it?
I'm guessing. It's a very popular book.
Huh.
I mean, it's probably sold in every airport and all that junk. But I mean, they loaded it up with Nicolas Cage and, you know...
Which we'll be talking about this evening.
Yeah.
Number seven, This Is Where I Leave You, brought in... $4 million in its third week for its total up to 29. Eight was Dolphin Tale 2, which brought in 3.4 in its fourth week, so its total is now 37.8. Number nine, Guardians of the Galaxy is still going pretty strong in its 10th week. It brought in $3 million, which brings its grand total up to $323.3 million.
That's crazy.
Which is insanity.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then number 10, No Good Deed, 2.5, in its fourth week, bringing its total up to 50.1. So...
A couple of films we haven't yet to see.
Right.
Because of our theater, but, you know, I imagine that we'll see most of those Redbox or somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
Keep coming up with funky-ass shit, like, every single day.
as you mumble off. That was Sorry. Lovely. So, some random movie news that was released in the last couple of days. So, anyone who saw the Lego movie, which came out earlier this year? Late last year. There was the character of Batman. Well, evidently, Warner Brothers is going to do a solo Lego Batman movie.
Yes. Batman was one of the more beloved characters in the movie, voiced by Will Arnett. And, I mean, it's a license that makes sense. You know, Batman makes a lot of money on its own with Dark Knight Rises, Batman versus Superman coming up. So, the iron, per se, is hot. So, might as well strike, right?
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be released in 2017.
I just wonder if it's going to be from the same directors. The guys who did...
What said, the Lego Batman movie will now likely take the May 26, 2017 release date, and the Lego movie sequel will now be pushed back to after 2017. Now, I wasn't even aware there was going to be a Lego movie sequel.
I don't know if I officially heard there was or not, but I mean, it did so well that it's got to be, you know. They just got to do it. Wouldn't make sense not to.
So, that's interesting. We recently watched a trailer for the new Quentin Tarantino film, The Hateful Eight, and it has been announced that Jennifer Jason Leigh has taken the female lead in this film, The Hateful Eight, which is set to shoot soon.
This caught me off guard because I don't know what Jennifer Jason Leigh has done recently, but I don't recall her in anything. Like, she was big in the early 90s.
Well, let's see what IMDb has to say. I've seen her in a couple of things lately. I just cannot recall them off the top of my head. I think it's
but
been
like
mostly,
things,
like,
though?
Little roles.
Okay.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. So, her... it looks like she's actually filming a couple things that are in post-production. Looks like she's going to be in Amityville, The Awakening.
Okay.
Set to release next year. In 2014, Welcome to Me, 2013, Jake Squared, Hate Ship, Love Ship, The Moment, Kill Your Darlings. Ah, she was the mom in The Spectacular Now, which is a movie that I watched recently. Looks like she has been a recurring character on the show Revenge. She had a recurring role in Weeds from 09 to 12. And then 2010, 8, 7, 5,
I mean,
4. So
I mean,
major.
Basically what I'm getting at is that's usually not a big deal for Quentin Tarantino. He usually doesn't look to see who's hot right now or whatever to cast them. Like he took Uma Thurman and put her in Kill Bill kind of after her big explosion. Like, she was in Pulp Fiction, which kind of, like, got her career going. She did, like, a couple of crappy movies. I think she did something called The Avengers, which is, like, based on a British TV show. There's a couple other things. She was in Batman and Robin as Poison Ivy. And then she did a bunch of bad movies to the point where she wasn't as big anymore, and then he cast her in Kill Bill, and it was just like, oh, well, yeah, she's a great actress now, you know? So, this makes sense, I suppose, but I just kind of... I mean, I'm still a little blind on what The Hateful Eight is going to be about.
Set in snowy Wyoming a few years after the Civil War, the film focuses on the tension among a group of people trapped after a blizzard diverts a stagecoach from its route. The group includes a competing pair of bounty hunters, a renegade Confederate soldier, and a female prisoner, and this is the part that Lee will play, who are all trapped in a saloon. It says that pre-production is already underway in Chicago, with plans to begin shooting December 8th before taking a short holiday break and resuming production in 2015.
Right. So, I mean, I'm very excited for this movie because I like most of his movies. I didn't like Kill Bill. That was probably it.
I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's It's cool in the sense of, like, visually it's cool, but it doesn't, like, the story to me doesn't really capture me or whatever. And I know there's a lot of people out there that would totally disagree with me, but I liked Inglourious Basterds. I liked Django Unchained, so it's not like he's falling off at all. In fact, in some ways, I think it's maybe kind of he's growing. Getting stronger in the sense of, like, big theatrical, like, more of an epic storytelling, because especially with Inglourious Basterds, which I don't think you've seen yet.
No, I haven't.
But you should, because it's fantastic. But, I mean, he sets up scenes so well, and it's like, before it was like, oh, well, he can set up modern scenes talking about pop culture and everything like that. No, he sets up scenes about, you know, someone who's out to kill Jewish people, and someone who's hiding Jewish people. And he sets it up just as well as pop culture reference discussion that he has in Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction or whatever. So I'm very excited. I know there are some people who really don't like Quentin Tarantino. And there's a lot of people...
Like, as a person, he's weird to look at.
I don't care.
Aside from that, I... You know, and it's interesting because I didn't realize that some of these recent things were done by him. Because to me, when I think Quentin Tarantino, I think of a little bit more odd things like Pulp Fiction or... Like, when him and Robert Rodriguez joined together to make the two Grindhouse films, mm-hmm. you know, that is kind of what comes to mind when I think of him. So, I think it'll be a cool film.
Yeah, a lot of my friends, like, on Facebook or whatever, a lot of my black friends were very anti-Django Unchained. Not all of them.
Strictly because of the plot?
I think that because of the subject matter, and Quentin Tarantino kind of uses the N-word freely, and some people think, okay, so there's Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He's against Tarantino using the N-word.
Because Tarantino is white? Because
he's not, yeah, because he's not black.
But it's okay for him as a director to use it because he is?
Well, not even that. I mean, he uses other, you know... derogatory slang terms in his movies with other races and cultures and blah blah blah. So it's like that idea of because you're not of this culture and you cannot use this word is ridiculous.
Right.
Because you're just hamstringing artistic freedom. Now if it's, you mean you can look at it on the screen and tell, is it being used by someone that's stupid and just wants to use the word, or
right,
is it
as
being...
opposed to does it actually add something
right,
to the
exactly.
film?
Right, exactly. Like, the N-word was used in Django Unchained a lot because it was of slavery times and a lot of white people not being very nice to black people.
Right.
Makes sense. It's all villainized and vilified or whatever. So, yeah, I like Tarantino a lot, and I recommend any... And, in fact, one of my friends, Lee... He was actually against Django Unchained, sat down and watched it on my recommendation, and actually liked it.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think some people drink the Kool-Aid and believe the rhetoric and all that stuff.
I love that expression, drink the Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid's good.
Cracks me up.
I don't blame them.
The third bit of news that we're going to go over, and this, admittedly, I saw this and decided I wanted to talk about it because I wanted to be a little selfish. You know, it's all about me. So, 2014 marks Marvel's 27th anniversary. So, as part of celebrations, there's going to be an hour-long primetime special of their history from 1939 to present.
27th anniversary?
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
75th.
Okay.
Whoa.
It's like, what?
No.
They've been around a
Sorry,
little bit longer
people.
Than that.
Where did I get that number?
Stupid dog.
75th anniversary.
Yeah.
Am I slightly dyslexic tonight? I don't know.
Maybe.
So I am actually looking forward to that. Says it's Marvel's 75 years from pulp to pop. It'll take fans new and old alike through the decades with the people who lived them in exclusive interviews. So this will air Tuesday, November 4th on ABC at 9 p.m. And this says that that's the same week that Disney's Big Hero 6 opens in theaters. So, kind of taking advantage of the little hero thing, but I like Marvel. I like their characters and such, so I think it would be really cool to see all together in one spot, kind of their history from beginning to now and, you know, what the future brings.
Well, I like documentaries, so I'm all for anything of documentary style, which mm-hmm. just sounds like it is. But I was having a, I guess not kind of a discussion, but kind of a, I don't even know what to call it, but basically I had posted the news about Guardians of the Galaxy getting their own cartoon on Disney XD.
Yes, and which I have that right here.
You know, we were talking about how basically, you know, Disney's pumping out a lot of Marvel stuff now. And they're doing it very quickly, too. It seems like just yesterday Disney bought Marvel. I think it was 3 years ago that they bought Marvel.
But the thing is, they're doing it well.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's not even that they're doing it well. It's just that they're doing it. Because a lot of companies buy a license and don't do anything with it. Or it'll be 8 years before something gets out. Mm-hmm. Of course, Disney has the capital to kind of do whatever they want. But, you know, we have Big Hero 6, which is a Pixar film. And we know that those aren't the easiest things to do.
Yeah, those take years for them to
So they create. Must have started it immediately.
Right.
Which neither of us have heard of Big Hero 6 before.
No, not until I saw the trailers.
Right. So they kind of... And that's the thing. They don't just pick the most popular things. They're picking things that they think are cool and they think they can do stuff with, like Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew of Guardians of the Galaxy before it was a movie.
Not really, yeah.
I mean, if you were...
The series is going to premiere in 2015 on the Marvel Universe programming block on Disney XD.
Right, but I mean, the only thing that I really didn't see Disney was doing well was when we went to Disneyland. There wasn't really that much of a big Marvel representation there. There was a little bit, I think there. I saw like a Captain America statue or something like that, you know, but it wasn't a lot. It was pretty scarce. A lot of it was, a lot of the outside normal Disney stuff was Star Wars.
Right. A lot of that stuff. That was kind of their big thing.
So, which is another thing that they're doing, they're just pumping out stuff with cartoons and movies and stuff like that. So, of course, it also helps that they have their own animation studio.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt.
So... but yeah, if you're a fan of something and you hear that Disney buys it, there could be a lot worse news out there than Disney buying it. Of course, that could mean Disney buying it that you're not going to get a super mature thing from Disney. You know,
yeah,
if it is,
that's true.
You know, so if Disney bought DC, it might be a little
There's
more interesting.
There's already test footage for the show.
There you go.
Have to give that a. Review.
But yeah, I mean, just to cap this story off, Disney does, they buy stuff for $4 billion, but they actually do something with it and do something promptly with it. So
yeah, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back we are going to be reviewing two films, Left Behind and Gone Girl.
Actually, before we take a break, let's answer our listener question that
we
got tonight.
Sorry,
I asked for questions kind of like last minute, last second deal, because we only have two movie reviews tonight. So Lee has yet to see American Horror Story, and he's thinking about watching it, and he wants to know our opinion on the show. And full disclosure, we've only seen the first two seasons. First season was American Horror Story. Second season was American Horror Story. Asylum.
Right.
Third was Coven.
Coven. And the current season, which just started this week, is Freak Show.
Right, which I actually had a dream about.
No way.
The night it aired, I had a dream about it. Like, so the night it aired, I went to sleep. Didn't watch it or anything.
Right.
I've only seen the teasers. I've seen the opening credits.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. So, we only seen the first two seasons. What do you think about it? Because it's not really your wheelhouse.
Yeah, admittedly, I was not interested in watching it. I had no desire whatsoever. But I was also really curious because Ryan Murphy created it and, you know, works on it.
Yeah.
And he created and does Glee, which is a show that I love. So I was very curious to see...
A show that I hate, by the way.
Well, I was curious to see how he would do this, because the premise of American Horror Story sounded completely the opposite of Glee, so it was curiosity that led me to watch the first episode, and it kind of hooked me. I was like, okay, this is interesting. Kept watching it, and I liked it. The first season was good, but I feel the second season was even better. And from a lot of chatter that I've heard, the third season is even better. So it seems like they're getting better the more they go. And the cool thing that I like about this is every season, they're doing a different storyline. So they bring in different characters, different actors, a lot of the same actors.
A lot of the same actors.
So you've got the first season had...
So basically,
five or six main people, and then in the second season, they've got two of them as main people, with some of the main from the first one being little bit parts, and, you know, a lot of those same people in the third one and the fourth one. So it's kind of cool to see that.
It's like, it's weird. It's like a mix of Saturday Night Live, not in the comedic sense, but they have a cast.
Right.
It's a mix of, like, Tales from the Crypt, because...
Or Twilight Zone.
It's an anthology. But at the same time, it's a drawn-out anthology because they spend a year on a single story.
Yeah, it's got your 22 episodes all about the same one story.
Yeah, so, I mean, the cool thing about American Horror Story is that it pushes the boundaries for television. It's on FX, so similar to what we talked about before with Sons of Anarchy, with Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, it's not PG or TV-14, it's TV-MA. What I don't like about American Horror Story is that it's very sexual, and I think that's because of Murphy. I think he just likes sex in general. Because it's, I mean, the first season was probably worse than the second season, but even the second season was very sexual. And it's not that that's a super bad thing, it's just that at certain points it feels like he's very obsessed with that, and, you know.
I think part of it, too, though, is depending on, like, the first season was, at least to me, set in modern day.
It is, yeah.
Asylum is set in, like, the 50s, 60s.
I think. Yeah, the 60s, I think.
And then I believe that Coven is a little bit more modern day. And then Freak Show is, like, back.
Back then, yeah.
So they kind of bounce. But I think that... I mean, I didn't even think that the first season was bad in terms of the sexual aspect.
You need to go back and watch it because it...
I mean, there's a husband and wife who... have relations, then there's a weird latex covered.
There's the latex man, being. There's the gay couple, there's the, Jessica Lange's character, she does quite a bit herself. There's the maid. I mean, there's a lot. And it sometimes it gets to the point of he focuses on it way too much. Where a horror fan like myself wants to see other stuff.
You want the blood and guts.
Not necessarily the blood and guts, but the psychology of it all.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I think I liked Asylum a bit more than the first season.
Me too.
So even though I did like this first season quite a bit too. But Freak Show, Coven doesn't really look that interesting to me.
It does to me because I think witches are cool.
Yeah, and I know. So, but Freak Show looks very interesting to me. In fact, my dream, so they have these little clowns in the intro. Ooh.
And FYI, I think clowns are like the scariest thing ever. Not because they are inherently scary, but there's just something so sinister about freaking clowns.
They got these little clown figurines, and they're twirling. Anyway, in my dream, I, like, set off to... I don't know what I was looking for, but I found these little clown figurines and a little boy. And I was with somebody, and, like, the person was, like, very infatuated with all this stuff.
Well, it wasn't me then.
And the boy was, you know, the boy was being shy and everything like that. And then the guy jumps back, like, from the boy, like, he's really scared and everything. I said, what? And he said, I just read his mind, and he wants to eat my intestines. And I'm like, what? Yeah, so, I mean, that was just from seeing, like, the trailers and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you scare easily or whatever, it might not be for you. But it does some very effective things, I think. And sometimes it gets a little too much, you know, into it. But for the most part, it's good. It's pretty damn good. So, but that's, I do recommend you check it out because it is a good show. Yeah, I won't guarantee that you'll like it or follow it all the way or get it, but...
And I would recommend, because the first season is kind of, there are some episodes that were kind of dull.
But at the same time, the first season is modern day.
Yeah, push through because it's worth it. And that's another thing that's really great about it is you don't have to have seen the first or second season to watch the third or to catch the fourth one because each season is a completely different story, completely different plot, different, you know, time. So that is the other cool thing about this show is that it's not like some of the series that are out there where if you didn't catch season one, you're going to be a little lost in season two.
Yeah, exactly. It resets every time. So there's a theory out there that it is all connected.
And I would be very curious to, you know, see how. But, yep, that's why those writers make the money, because they have the imaginations. But, okay, so now we will take a quick break and be back in a flash. We'd like to thank you for listening to the Lex Podcast and remind you that you can follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. So for Facebook, just go to facebook.com/marriedreviews, and Instagram, go to instagram.com/marriedreviews. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show.
Left Behind is the first of two of our movie reviews tonight, and it tells the story of the rapture, where all people who believe, truly believe in God, vanish to heaven, leaving the sinners and non-believers behind to duke it out on earth. This remake of Kirk Cameron's film adaptation of Tim Lehigh, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, and Jerry B. Jenkins' book is not only moronic, it's offensive to anyone who's not a Christian because it states that anyone who isn't Christian, even if they have their own different God, is just not good enough to make it into heaven. The acting is horrid, the special effects are sci-fi movie of the week bad, the plot twists are eye-rolling affairs. Put simply, Left Behind is my pick so far for worst movie of the year. I will never watch this again unless it's torture tactic of one of my worst enemies. I give this piece of trash a 0.5 out of 5. 0.5. 0.5. That is pretty much the lowest you can go without... I mean, the only way you can go lower is if you have an incomplete film that I see, which isn't going to happen, right? No one's going to release an incomplete film to theaters. This is terrible. This is bad. This is one of the most painful experiences I had at the theater. I just kept putting my hand in my head and looking off to the side of my chair, and I could not believe how bad this was. It was like somebody was drunk the whole time, from writing the script to shooting the movie to editing the movie. It was really, really bad. And this had a budget of like $15, $16 million. And the effects were horrid.
I'm having so much fun watching your reaction.
But it's bad. It's very bad.
But be specific, what is bad about
everything? It? What isn't? Name something. Name something.
See, it's funny because I didn't interpret things the same way as you, obviously.
I don't know how you didn't. This was terrible. See, it's those TV movies you watch all the time. It's those TV movies.
I think that we should throw out there, I am very open-minded when it comes to religion, politics, beliefs of any kind, whatever. I love to have discussions, healthy debates, because I feel that somebody else who has a different opinion than me can open my mind up to something I may not have considered before. So I go into things like this open-minded. I personally am not religious in any way, shape, or form. I would consider myself agnostic, meaning that I don't believe, but I don't necessarily disbelieve. I really haven't decided what I believe yet. So I was expecting that this was going to be something that shoved the idea of God down my throat. And I was actually surprised that it wasn't as Bible thumping as I thought it could be. I feel like the movie The Identical was more in your face about Jesus than this was.
In the sense of it had a character that was a preacher, yes.
But in that movie, it was, God says you need to do this and need to do that and blah, blah, blah.
Right, but the whole time but he's...
It wasn't like that in this.
But the message of The Identical was, no, I need to do what I need to do. I need to... Not the call from God or what this preacher says, I need to do what I want to do. And he does it. And that's mm-hmm. that story of this. This film is, if you do not believe, you are going to be stuck behind with looters and sinners, and your plane's going to crash, and it's like hell on earth. So the whole story of this, and I think what I took offense to the most, and what a lot of people would take offense to if they saw this, I'm guessing, is that there's a Muslim character on the plane who is religious, who prays, talks about his God, but he doesn't get into heaven because his God isn't the Christian God. So it's... And I understand that this is set upon what if Christian reality or religion was correct in reality, but at the same time, it's just such an offense. It's shoving it down your throat that you need to be Christian or else the rapture is going to happen to you.
But do you find the idea of rapture to be offensive? Because that seems to be, to me, what you're taking offense to is that because I don't believe, I get stuck on earth. Like, is that bad?
Yeah, it is bad in the sense of if your religion's ultimate goal is to get into heaven.
But you are not religious. You don't adhere to the ideal of heaven.
No, I'm not saying
that. So why do you care?
I'm not saying that on that level. I'm saying it from the filmmaker's point of view, from the story writer's point of view, is the only way you're getting into heaven is if you're the crazy lady who's saying the rapture's going to happen all the time. Or if you're a kid.
Because, yeah, in this movie, it was anybody who believed or children, because children are considered innocent. They haven't had time to sin.
Yeah. So, it's... I mean, there's a moment in the beginning of this film where there's a crazy lady in an airport, and she's going like this, and one of the main characters puts her in her place, and so you're kind of like, oh, well, it's not going to be like...
Yeah, and that's exactly what I thought. But, I was like, oh, God, the crazy Jesus lady, but, oh, you go. Okay, you shut it down. This is okay. This is going to be decent.
Right, which I thought, too, I was lulled into a false sense of... But she's right. Like, she's... In the film, she's right. So it's like, yeah, she got shut down and everything like that, but in the end, she was absolutely right, and... The person who shut her down was wrong.
So?
Isn't that symbolic of the people who are religious fanatics are correct? They are the people who are going to get into heaven, which is the almighty prize in the eyes of Christians, right?
If that's your belief, yes.
Okay, I'm just saying that's stupid. Because, again, and it's because I don't adhere... or subscribe to the Christian religion. So, me watching this, it's like going to a football game. You have a favorite team, and you go to a football game between two of your rival teams. There's no horse in the race for you in this.
If you're not a Christian, why are you getting so worked up?
Because if you're not a Christian, this movie is pointless.
But looking at it, taking that, if you're not a Christian, bit out of it, see, and I think that that's where we're differing on our take of the film, is because I watched it completely objectively.
I watched it objectively, too. It just pissed me off the whole time.
But why did it piss you off? Because for whatever reason you allowed it to.
Yeah, because it was stupid.
Like I personally do not believe
the points that a rapture would happen. Stupid.
If it did, I know I wouldn't be going anywhere. I'd be, quote, stuck here because of my belief.
Let's talk about how these people disappear. They actually poof.
Like, physically, yeah, their bodies are no longer, they leave their clothes behind, whatever jewelry they were wearing, their shoes are now empty.
Their naked bodies go to heaven.
Yeah. Okay. Party up
there. I'm sorry, it's not cool, it's not interesting, it's not thought-provoking, it's just stupid to me. Because it's like there's no real mystique about this film. The film, for the most part, just focuses on this plane and whether it's going to land.
And I think that's why I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, because it wasn't all about this rapture thing. They're in a plane. That's a bunch of... Listen, let me have my turn.
How do you not... If you have a rapture story, how do you not focus on the rapture? How do you not discover or go behind the scenes and try to determine why this is happening? And you know,
because there's not supposed to be a why.
But there is, because it's in the Bible. So if the Bible is correct, then that opens up the whole floodgates, right? If that one thing in the Bible is correct, that means everything in the Bible is going to be correct.
Yeah. And basically, rapture is the warning that shit's about to go down.
Right, there's a priest or a preacher or some that doesn't go to heaven. And he explains why, but it's like, that's an interesting concept. And they just kind of just blow it by. She leaves and he starts crying. And then they go back.
She called him out on it.
Yeah, she did. And he explained it for maybe a few seconds. But they don't go further. I'd like to see, if they're going to make it a religious movie...
Go there.
Yeah, don't check it out and just go to this action thing with a plane trying to land and stuff like that.
But again, back to what I was saying, that's actually what I think made me look at this as a decent film, was because it wasn't so focused on the rapture and the preachy BS. It was, they're in a plane leaving JFK Airport heading to London. As they're over the Atlantic, the event happens. Rapture occurs. People and children disappear from the plane, causing panic. This and that. They decide to turn around rather than continue on to London because they also don't have any communication with the ground, so they don't know if this is just an isolated thing to them or if it's happened everywhere. So they, on their way back to JFK, another plane is coming at them. And hits their wing and goes down, and it's because their pilots disappeared. So now they're in kind of a crisis emergency mode of having to get over land before they run out of fuel and find a place to land. When they do make communication with the ground, they realize that JFK has no place for them to land, so they have to find somewhere else that they can land safely. I liked that it focused... I like action films, so I like that it focused more on that than the religious bit of it.
But
so for me, it was decent.
The cardinal sin of this film is that it sets up its own ideology and bails on it halfway through. Not even halfway through. A little bit before.
In what way, though? Because I don't feel like anything was bailed on.
Because this was not a film about the rapture. This was a film about landing a plane when
exactly.
You don't have a place to land. But why is that interesting?
Because a plane full of people could potentially crash and die unnecessarily. So there's the suspense.
Which happens in the film.
Well,
the plane they crash into crashes and everybody on the plane dies. Not their plane.
Right.
But somebody else is playing. So it's like,
so that kind of is supposed to get you to feel some empathy for the people who are surviving on this plane and need to land.
But the people on the plane are a bunch of jackasses.
That doesn't mean that they don't deserve to live.
I'm just saying, how am I supposed to feel empathy with a plane of jackasses?
Because what if you were the jackass on that plane? You'd want to live.
Yeah, but that would be my own interest. I'm a moviegoer. Having to care about a plane full of people, and they don't make me care about this plane full of people.
There's not a single character that you felt for?
See, the only character you'd really feel for is Nicolas Cage's character because of his daughter and their, you know. But even then, I don't care because he's a cheating bastard. So, again, they don't set that character up for us to care about him. They actually do the opposite. And they make you feel bad for his daughter because he's a complete ass to her. Right? The whole tickets thing, which was set up very well. Again, 2 months in advance, he knew he was going to be going to London, and he just lies about having to be called into work. She figures it out, knows about it, and everything like that, and he just looks like the biggest piece of shit ever.
Yeah.
So you don't care about him going onto the plane. And I don't know. It's just, it doesn't work. On any level for me, it doesn't work. It's not an exciting, thrilling thing for me with the plane. It just blew ass all over the runway, if you will. I don't like Nicolas Cage, but he's actually not offensive in this film because they don't give him anything too crazy to do. The best part of the film is Chad Michael Murray. Because his performance by the people around him looks like an Oscar-worthy performance. Because he's like the best actor in the film. Would you agree?
Yeah.
By far, best actor in the film?
Yeah, and he's not over the top or in your face, or
right,
he's
exactly.
Just normal.
Yeah, and because of that normality, he's probably the most likable character in the film.
I don't know, I liked the daughter. I thought that she was decent.
She should have jumped. That's all I'm gonna say.
Ouch.
Anyway, yeah, this is a horrid movie. I mean, if you're Christian, hey, go for it. It's gonna wimp out on the whole rapture thing, though, and it's not gonna fully please your wanting to hear the word of God and all that stuff, because it jumps into a turbulence movie.
But I think that that's the other thing, like, at least in my personal opinion, anybody who is going to this movie for a movie about rapture it's not the right movie for that. But anybody who would be wanting to see it for rapture related stuff is already going to know the full everything about it. What's going to lead up to the rapture, what's going to happen after. They're not going to need the prequel, the event, and the sequel.
It's not about that, though, with The Walking Dead.
Okay, but you're saying that
we'll use The Walking Dead as an example.
Okay.
Okay. What happens? We know that a virus breaks out, kills people, turns them into zombies, right? We know
sure.
that after that, there will be zombies. There will be
yes.
zombies forever. So we know the beginning, we know the middle, we know the end
mm-hmm.
of the zombie apocalypse. But it's about the individual stories of the people who are trying to survive that make it interesting.
Which is why we care about the people on the plane.
No. This is not an interesting story at all. Whatsoever.
To you.
It's just not. It's not an interesting story. Like, The Walking Dead sets up relationships and goes through and explores the differences in culture and so on and so forth.
And has also had 4 seasons to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, the problem with this is that it spends so much goddamn time on that plane. That's the movie. It's not a religious movie. This is a movie about a plane that needs to land.
Yeah.
And it's not a very good one.
I never said it was a good one, but I don't feel it was as bad.
Absolutely horrible.
Which one specifically are you referring to?
How about every plane shot where we see the plane? It looks like a toy plane just flying through the air. How about that? How about
I thought the worst special effects thing, the only one that to me was like glaringly in your face obvious, is when the gasoline is leaking out of the plane.
How about before that, when the two planes hit? It's so bad. Or how about when the plane is landing and it's sliding along the thing? It just looks so bad. I've seen YouTube special effects that look better than that. It's absolutely horrid. I'll say this. This is in defense of movies like Transformers, where I gave it a 3, and I said it's mainly because of the visuals. And I think people see great visuals all the time and they just say, well, that's just part of the course. No, those are very, very hard work. And this film proves that great visuals just don't happen all the time. I mean, you got to work hard. You have to have a talented studio to do it. This was bad. Really bad. I'm wondering how the hell this budget was so much.
The names, the...
The name. I don't think Chad Michael Murray is demanding all that much.
No, I'm saying I think that they were able to get a bigger budget because they had bigger names.
Oh,
Nicolas Cage,
Michael
Murray.
I thought you were saying they spent so much on the salaries that the budget...
Oh, no. I'm just saying that I think that when you get somebody... Like, if you get Brad Pitt in your movie, you're going to get a bigger budget than if you you know, somebody who was just plucked off the street and is a no-name.
So. All right, so what's your rating on the film? Because I'm just going to keep bashing it if we don't move
on. You really are. I'm giving it a 1.5. Still low, but higher than you, because, like I said at the beginning, I looked at it purely objectively. I was pleasantly surprised that I didn't have religion shoved down my throat. They mentioned it. They said their bit. They moved on. I like action things. I was more intrigued by the landing of the plane crisis.
I want to say that I watched this objectively, too.
I don't believe you.
I was not... I came into it saying whatever happens, happens. And through the course of the movie, the things that were displayed made me upset. Not because, you know, I hate the Christian religion or anything like that. No, I think this is a terrible representation of the Christian religion. I think it's absolutely awful. I think it's too simple. I think it's too moronic.
It's not meant to be a representation of any religion.
It is! It's about the rapture as described by the Christian book.
Yeah, briefly. Of the two-hour movie, maybe 20 minutes total is spent talking about rapture and God.
But
and
all
Jesus.
This is happening because of the rapture.
So?
What do you mean
It happened, people are gone, we gotta deal with it. And that's what this film is, them dealing with it.
What about the... Our cat is just wanting to get in right now. What about the people that are like, oh, I gotta change my life around to get into heaven now?
Good for them?
But, I mean, it is about saying, well, the only way I'm gonna get in is Christian religion. So, now I've gotta believe in this God over here.
If that's your ultimate goal and what you want is to be in heaven, then sure, change your life and
believe
that.
Let's just say this. If there was a Muslim movie that came out that was like this, people would be up in arms.
People get up in arms about any religion in general, as this conversation is showing.
I'm just saying, I'm up in arms because I'm not part of Christian America. I just don't accept it as... You know, if this was a sci-fi horror story, like, you know, I don't know, The Stand or whatever, like Stephen King's type stuff, Langoliers, whatever, people vanishing, okay. Either go all out with it, with the Christian thing, so I can envelop myself into it, you know, if you're going to make jabs at the, you know, Christian religion, I mean, do it, but, or just... Don't have it be... Just have people disappear and just don't say it was about the Christian religion. Just do one or the other. Just don't flop in the middle because then you look weak. Because then your story... It looks like you bailed on your story, basically. And that's how I felt as a viewer just watching it. And I didn't get enough religion to be like, okay, I'm into it. Hey, The Exorcist, right? It's about Catholic religion. I'm not a Catholic, am I?
Are you?
No, exactly. I did not hate that film. I actually really enjoyed what was being discussed about the Catholic religion. Even though I'm not, and I'm never going to be. This is just, it's a bad representation. I think that's my final words on it. It's a bad representation of the Christian religion.
I will say, though, that because I am a glutton for punishment, I do kind of want to see the original that this was based off of. I do want to watch these, though, because I'm just really curious to see how different they are. And, heck, If you watch it, you might think that this is, like, brilliant in comparison. But we did discover that there are three movies, and they are all three on Netflix.
I don't know if I can bring myself to watch them.
I think I might at least just, like, start it, because you read somewhere, or I did, or something, that what we saw with this Nicolas Cage version is, like, the first five chapters of the book, whereas the Kirk Cameron version is literally the whole first book.
Yeah, that's what I read on IMDb.
So, supposedly, we could watch the first 20 minutes of it and, you know, have our comparison.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
you watch them. You watch the first one, at least. Tell me how it goes, and then maybe I'll be in. I don't know. We disagreed about this film.
Yeah,
so
we did,
not.
Pretty drastically.
All right, so on to the next film.
Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike star in the David Fincher film Gone Girl, based on a book of the same name by Gillian Flynn. Nick, played by Affleck, comes home to find his wife missing in a mess in the living room, leading him to believe that his wife Amy, played by Pike, has been taken. The police are not quite convinced because things look a little too staged. And with her disappearance becoming the focus of the media, Nick soon crumbles under the pressure and the lies, deceits, and odd behaviors, which cause people to question, did Nick kill Amy? Simple camera work, but amazing acting and a strong plot make this a very great movie with a slightly unexpected twist that kept me on the edge of my seat. I give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Excuse me. I'll give it a 4.5 as well, but I'm honestly going to say I thought I was going to like this movie more than I did. I thought this movie was going to be right up my alley. And it was up my alley, but it's kind of like, I was a little underwhelmed by some of the things, and I'll get to those in a bit. But overall, story-wise, it really attempts to keep it interesting. And it's 2.5 hours long. So for a story to stay interesting for 2.5 hours has to be really strong in the first place. But they really try to go the extra mile to make sure you don't know what's coming next.
Yeah.
And I think it's... I think it would have actually been better suited as a TV series myself.
I think it would have been a really cool miniseries, even if, like, you know, 5-6 episode miniseries.
Right. Because I think there's a few things that could have been explored more. But, I mean, if you're going to put this in a film, I think it was a very effective film. You're going to go in there, and as long as you're not someone that can't focus on a story, because there are people who like more action-oriented stories. What it does successfully is it sets something up for you, the viewer, to want to say, I think this is going to happen next.
Right.
And when it doesn't happen, when what you think happens doesn't happen, that's when it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
well,
kind of a mind fuck. You're right. Like, what?
Right. So I think
slightly
that's how it traps
like,
you.
With Begin Again. Music one, right?
Yeah.
That movie was kind of like that. They set things up and you think, okay, you come to a fork in the road, they're going to go, you know, route A. Right. And then instead they go route B. But even then, the way that you think route B will end up isn't what actually
right, but
happens.
This Gone Girl
so this
does
is
kind it more of
like
blatantly.
That, but yeah, in a lot more in your face kind of a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's attempting to be... I in my short review on Facebook, I compared it to a modern-day noir film. Because the story is pretty much over dramatized. It's something that's could be reality, and it has been reality before. You know, we've had these husbands accused of murder. Most of the time, it's them who murders.
Yeah.
You know. So, and I don't want to spoil this movie because I think your enjoyment of this film, it hinges on not knowing what's happening or what's going to happen. Or the less you know about the film, blah, blah, blah. Because I didn't know really anything about the film except for what I saw on the trailers. And they don't show you a whole lot, really. I mean, they edit it together in the way of it still keeps you in the dark by telling you something, at least. But this film also wouldn't work without strong performances. Mm-hmm. And so that's another reason why it's successful, is because Ben Affleck does a fantastic job of playing. Like, he's not too sensational. He's believable on both sides of the fence. He's believable when he first meets Amy, and he's acting like a New York City cultured blah 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 type guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's realistic as the guy who orders a bunch of video games and laptops on a credit card when they don't have jobs and that sort of thing.
Right.
Like, he's believable on both sides of the fence, and that is crucial to this sort of film.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who doesn't think that Ben Affleck can act needs
watch
to
watch this movie.
See this, and I think there was something else that came out recently that he's really good in. I like Ben Affleck in most of the stuff he does. You know, I don't think I've ever had a movie of his where I'm like, oh, he was just awful in that. Okay, never mind. I forgot about Gigli. That was just ill-advised all around. Rosamund Pike as Amy. What'd you think of her? Her being foreign and playing an American.
She's foreign?
Yeah, she's British.
Oh.
Okay, well, there you go.
And I had only ever seen her in one other thing, at least that was super obvious. She was in a movie called Surrogates with Bruce Willis a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays the robot surrogate person.
Right.
So,
In this film, she works because she's...
Yeah,
her character is psychotic.
Familiar.
Her character is a little psychotic, so...
A little?
Again, I'm trying not to spoil too much here. She's a little psychotic, and so there's times where she needs to have that nobody's home type look to her.
Yeah, very vacant.
Yeah, and then there's times where she needs to... portray very humanistic qualities, and she does that as well too. So her face kind of annoyed me a bit, but I suppose it was okay. Her character really annoyed me too, especially the beginning. Like, I just didn't like her character at all.
See, and it wasn't,
it's not my type of
later
person.
That I started disliking her, because I was totally on the Nick did it bandwagon, and I was like, are they going to reveal that he, like, blacks out and does things for periods of time where he doesn't remember? Or does he have a split personality, so it's the other personality
right.
that killed her, so the main one doesn't have any knowledge of it? Like, you know, there's,
the film,
it puts you on edge.
It plants stuff to make you think certain things
right.
that aren't there.
And my CSI nerd was trying to figure it out.
I failed. Yeah,
it
shows you scenes, and you don't know if they're true or not.
Yeah.
So, but I also think there's very strong performances from the side characters as well. Kim Dickens as the detective. I almost said lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she's a lieutenant or not. But detective, who first goes on the case, she brings kind of like a... It's funny, her character evolves throughout the film,
yeah,
which is awesome to see. She comes in as kind of like the hot shot. We've done this a million times before. Your wife is missing, but it's probably not a big deal, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she's walking through the house, and just the way she does everything is so believable, and you feel comfortable with this character,
because
you know you're going to have to be down the long road with this character. Ben Affleck, who played the actress who plays his sister in this film, I thought was really good too. And I'd never seen her in anything that I remembered, at least. Her character's name is Margot. She kind of has an interesting personality in the beginning. And it's one that, if it stayed the same the whole way through the film, would have been annoying. But she gets vulnerable later in the film
mm-hmm.
because of reasons I don't want to say.
Yeah.
But, you know, she plays that really well. Like, this is a human being, not a character on a page, you know. So, just there's a lot of different side characters that were really well done. You realize that good films have all these different things that make them a good film. It's not just one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving this a 4.5 just for the story.
It's, right, yeah, that...
It's good, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't work without the actors, it wouldn't work without the direction, it wouldn't work without right. the settings.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Perry as the attorney for Nick.
I really liked his role.
He's spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the charismatic TV lawyer type guy, you know. The Johnny Cochran, if you will. I don't know. It's a good film, but at the same time, there are things with the plot that...
What was it about the plot that you are still scratching your head
over? The end of the film, which I can't talk about, obviously, because it's spoilers... But the end of the film,
and
I
normally
didn't like.
We have no issues with spoilers, but this one,
yeah, again,
we just can't.
You need to know as little as you can mm-hmm. going into this film,
unless, of course, if you've read the book.
Well, I hear the book, the ending for the book is different. So
right, but still, if you've read the book, you know what the big twist is. You know what we're not saying.
Yeah, for the most part. But I didn't care for the ending too much, just because. I mean, it almost felt like they were, like, setting it up for a sequel. But...
Maybe.
Not 100%.
I'm not sure how or what it'd be, but...
But just kind of as a life goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And what stings about it is we spend 2.5 hours with these characters, and I don't want a life goes on type ending with this film. I want a more definitive ending, I guess. And it just doesn't give me that.
See, and it's really weird how certain things are starting to, like, switch as we're watching movies. I'm always the one that I need my questions answered unless I know that there's a sequel coming. And I don't like loose ends and, you know, plot holes piss me off. I didn't feel that with this. I feel that while it was not a desirable outcome, it wasn't what I, as a viewer, wanted. All the loose ends were tied up and... You know, it's done in a way that you now get to use your imagination as to what comes next, but I was actually okay with the ending.
I didn't care for it too much. But, like, a movie like Boyhood doesn't really need a definitive ending for me, just because that's what the whole movie is about. It's about life just... passing by and going on. This isn't necessarily like that. This is a very concentrated story. It tells you, it puts the date in the screen, so it's very calculated storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of expected a little bit more with the ending, but I would have liked to see more from the detective. Because she's in there for a while and then she disappears when certain things go on. And it's extremely hard to talk about this film without trying to spoil anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just kind of goes away into something else for a little while, like a big national scene for a little while. So it involves different characters.
Mm-hmm.
And while those characters are still good, I kind of would have liked... Almost like a Fargo deal, where you get to know all the local characters, and you spend the entire movie with these local characters, and so you feel like you're living there, almost. And when it switches to a national deal, you no longer feel that personal connection mm-hmm. with the setting, if you will. It's no longer in small town Missouri, it's... You know, they're off to New York to do an interview or, you know,
right.
something like that. So, I very small things, you know, take a half a point off for it. It's not perfect in the sense of nothing's perfect, but my ideal of perfect film. What didn't you like about this? Because you didn't give it a perfect 5, so something was wrong. At least one thing was wrong.
It's not that anything was wrong, and it's, I guess it's for me kind of the way that you were with the 100-foot journey. You gave it a pretty high rating, but you didn't give it a full 5 just because there was just that je ne sais quoi, that something that you can't quite, you know, pinpoint. And, I mean, I don't want to say that it was the cinematography because it was, you know, plain, normal, boring shots. Because then, you know, that's, like, not fair. Just because they chose not to do, like, these crazy reflection shots or, you know, out of focus, foreground, background, you know, whatever. I'm not sure. I mean, I almost wish that we had more split ratings where I could give it a 4.75 just because I just don't know what it was, but it just wasn't quite at that level for me like Boyhood was. You know, it just...
I think it's because it was... I don't think it touched you personally. That's probably what it was.
Yeah, that, I mean, like, obviously if I had ever been involved in something similar to this, it'd probably be a lot closer to home. But that's not to say that it's not an amazing movie, though, and I would be really shocked if this doesn't get at least a couple of nominations come, you know, award season.
Probably. Yeah.
Whether or not it wins, you know, but I definitely am expecting to see some
I wouldn't be shocked.
Nominations. So.
Yeah. But I give it a 4.5. You get a 4.5. Definitely a recommendation on both
for
of our
sure.
parts.
Yeah, go see it.
Go see it. Try to avoid spoilers. The less you know about this film, the better it will be.
Mm-hmm.
I knew next to nothing about this film.
Yeah, my only knowledge of it was what's in the trailers, right, which is nothing.
Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris had a nice role, too. By the way, I just want to throw this. I don't want to forget anyone because there are lots of different side roles that had like a good impact on the film.
Yeah.
You know, so we talked earlier about American Horror Story, and that's one of the things that makes that show special is that it has great performances like down the line. So not just the lead, but the side characters who even get maybe a couple episodes. So
I just found a trivia thing. Gillian Flynn, author of the novel the film is based on, wrote the screenplay with a different ending to keep readers interested in the film version and viewers from getting spoiled.
Yep.
Interesting. So now I'm really curious to read the book.
Maybe that's the ending that I wanted in
Maybe.
The book. I don't know.
I'll read it and I'll let you know.
There you go, because I won't read it. I'm a slow reader. It'd take me forever. So
have we looked at what we have coming up?
Yes, we have Alexander in the terrible, horrible...
No good, very bad day.
It is no good. Okay, no good, very bad day. And that's an 81-minute film, so
yeah,
I'm actually
excited.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. You don't see him that short anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited because I'll be watching these back-to-back, and it's Dracula Untold is the other one, kind of Dracula story, but from his point of view.
And, well, all the Dracula stories that you hear are never about how Dracula came to be. So I'm really interested in this. Like, I started watching Bram Stoker's Dracula way younger than I probably should have been watching vampire movies.
But, so did I, though. Like, I saw
that
movie, too.
So I think that the Dracula story is pretty fascinating, but that is not focused on Dracula so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this will be kind of interesting to see, you know, the origin story of Dracula.
Yeah.
But those are the only two films that we have. So do we know if anything will be out in Redbox that we can catch up on? Because we still have...
Redbox.
I still have to watch Edge of Tomorrow, Million Ways to Die in the West, and Neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. And Redbox just scatters their releases all over the place. So, like, we went to Walmart a couple days ago, and you look at the new release section, and it's everything we need to watch is there.
Coming soon, Neighbors.
But go up to Movies, and then go to Coming Soon section, and we can check it out there. But
does that actually tell dates?
Yeah, it does. There we go.
Okay, so this weekend,
So this Tuesday is...
Nothing. Next
is Neighbors.
Neighbors. And then, look, Chef is already going to be here. And then November 4th, Million Ways to Die in the West. And... It's so weird to look at this list right here of movies, and I've seen all
right,
of these.
The Equalizer,
that's
which we just
so bizarre.
Saw.
Yeah, that's weird. Edge of Tomorrow doesn't look like it's coming anytime soon.
Yeah, it should be up there.
Did
Let's
I skip
see.
It?
Yeah, right there.
Oh, that's what
yeah,
it is.
Because
okay.
the movie studio rebranded it. When it was in theaters, it was Edge of Tomorrow.
Now it's Live, Die, Repeat.
Edge of Tomorrow. Live, Die, Repeat. Colon Edge of Tomorrow.
That's dumb.
Because
you don't do that after a movie's been.
Well, the problem was it didn't make very much money at the box office because people didn't know what it was about. Like
Live,
the post...
Die, Repeat still doesn't tell me what it's about, other than oh, this must be a Groundhog Day film.
Yeah, but the original thing didn't tell you that. It didn't tell you anything. The poster was so generic, and Edge of Tomorrow doesn't tell you anything.
I still think it should be called Edge of Tomorrow, and maybe Live, Die, Repeat should be, like, the tagline.
I don't know. Like, I went into it not knowing anything about it, because I didn't see the trailer or anything like that. I couldn't tell what it was about from
the
poster.
I don't think the trailer really gave much away, though.
Yeah, so, but I really enjoyed the film, so that is one I think you're gonna like, too. I think it's up your alley, but...
Sweet.
Yeah, so those are the films that are coming soon, and there's a few movies on Netflix. I'm going to start going through and trying to find the movies that have released in 2014 and watch a few of those and try to get reviews done for those. I did watch Bad Grandpa this past week, and I'm a fan of the whole Jackass deal, and it was pretty damn funny. What they did was they actually had a script for it, but they shot all their scenes with unassuming people and just got their bare reaction. So it's not huge on story or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but it has like story bullets that it hits, and then they do these things and then go to the next one. It's pretty funny. So I recommend if you're into the whole... If you like seeing people get pranked, it's a pretty damn funny film. So, but
cool.
That does it for us here tonight. So, thank you for listening. Of course, as always, check out rantemradio.com. That's the home of the Lex Podcast. And also, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/marriedreviews and instagram.com/marriedreviews for that. That's all we've got cooking tonight, so... Hopefully everybody has a good weekend, and by the way, if you need to get a hold of us, if you want to give us a review of any movies that you've seen lately,
or throw out questions that you would like us to answer on our next episode,
you can hit us up at lexmarston@gmail.com. That's lexmarston@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks.
Good night.